Hey, everybody. I want to welcome you to the next podcast, the next podcast with Tim Graves. And I want to thank you guys for being part of this and have a special guest today. I have Paul Monahan with me. And a lot of you guys out there know Paul. Paul is our mental game coach. And I hope you guys know Paul through, he's written articles for my newsletter for quite a few years, actually a lot of years, as far back as I can remember. He's also, obviously, he teaches our mental game school. He's our mental game coach with Graves Golf. So when we do the Alert Attitude of Indifference School and our mental game school, Paul runs those. In fact, it's one school I love to go to, and I'm the guy who helps Paul. So I love being part of those schools because it's the one school I get to help. Yeah, exactly. I get to be a helper. So anyway, but Paul, the reason I want to bring him in this podcast is Paul has a new book out called The Most Important Game. And I love the title, Play Better, Struggle Less, Enjoy More. Reflections from a Mental Game Coach to Inspire Fresh Thinking, More fun playing the game you love. Yeah, to me it's blah 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 blah. Okay,
so, you read that very well.
Yeah, I read that really well.
Yeah, that's good.
No, I mean Paul's amazing. I mean, in fact, a lot of you guys have heard me talk about Paul before, or if you haven't, in some of my webinars, because he's been at webinars and stuff too. But I actually hired Paul personally to work for me just outside the company. He had to help me get my life in order. So it's like, I mean, it was a great deal. And not only did he help me get my life in order, he helped me get my golf game in order and everything else. So, but I want to talk in this podcast, I want to talk about the book. I know you're really excited to have it out. And, you know, I'll tell you how important it is for us. We actually have a fast forward program. It's a fast forward program that we gave to all the elite members. So our elite membership group, and then those that also bought into the fast forward program, we had a deal where it lasted 4 months. It's still ongoing. And Todd was part of it. I was part of it. You were part of it. And then Chris Henning was part of it. And so we had a long game, short game, mental game, physical part of it. And this book was, we gave this to all the fast forward guys. So this is going out to all the fast forward guys. And part of that program is that important. So, I mean, we think it's unbelievable. But let's talk about the book. I mean, I know you've been working on it for how long now? I mean, it's been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. It's been one of these, you know, journeys that started a number of years ago as I was inspired by you and Todd and others in the arena to, you know, kind of begin, you know, kind of putting my thoughts down about, you know, what's important about the mental game. And so I began writing these articles, and, you know, it's just so funny. Over time, you start chipping away, you look back, you're like, man, I got a whole bunch of stuff here, you know,
right.
And let's compile everything if we can and have it make some sense. And so
that's very cool.
Yeah.
It's always a big deal in a book out. I guess it makes it important, right? I mean,
it's so funny. Yeah, it really is.
Well, let's talk about the process of getting a book out first. Let's talk about that. Let's talk what's in this book, because we were laughing about that this morning, right?
So no doubt.
I mean, tell me where, you know, so you said there's, talk about the book itself, I guess.
Oh, sure.
I mean, like what's in it, let's talk about what's all about. And then, some of the good stories are in it. Cause I know there is. I mean, I haven't officially read it yet. Cause I haven't had a copy of it yet. Now I know what's in it, cause I saw the draft you sent out. So yeah. I haven't read the book itself, but, you sent out a rough draft of it, and I got to go through it, and it was awesome. But, so talk about a little bit about the different stories, some of your favorite ones in there. And let's talk about, let's go through that.
Yeah. So no, thanks. I appreciate that. Appreciate the opportunity to do this. It's, it really was a fun project. I had not written a book before, and you know, it is kind of funny, you know, a lot of things we talk about in the mental game, you know, I experienced firsthand, you know, one of the things is we think about like, oh, am I enough? I know. Right. Who would possibly want to read what I would write? You know what I mean? That's like, and, you know, we experienced to a large extent the same thing on the golf course. How could I ever shoot a 75?
Right.
You know, that's impossible, right. You know? And, but once we kind of work through these self-doubts and so forth, a lot of people who are playing, right. We start chipping away and we realize like, oh, this is what's possible.
Right.
I could put this out there. And oh, by the way, there's meaning for others in the things that I'm writing,
right.
Things that I'm reflecting on. And I think once I realized that was true for me, right. Sort of true in the universe. Right. I thought, all right, let's get this thing together. And so, just a couple of years ago, I started putting this together. I went to an editor, you know, and that's a big process. You know, they start wanting to rewrite your stuff. And I'm like, wait a minute. No, I want to say way. You know, I meant to say it that way.
Well, give a little bit of your background, because I mean, you know, it wasn't just something that happened overnight. So give me a little bit of your background, and then, who else you work with? Cause I mean, obviously you're just not with Graves Golf. Now we obviously use you as our mental game coach. So if we, if we've got articles we want or schools we're going to run or people need help out there, I mean, and they love it. I mean, obviously you're the guru for us, but you don't obviously you don't just work for Graves Golf. Give a little bit of your history, what you've done in the past. I mean, I know there's a lot, and then a little bit of what else you do now. And then, because there's some really cool stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we go way, way back. One interesting story, many lifetimes ago for me, there was a company out of Chicago called Successories. Successories was the company that pioneered the decorative wall art, right? The stuff that you see on the wall. It's like teamwork, attitude,
right?
All these, and they've been around for a while. So it's early 90s. And I was really into this stuff. I was into Zig Ziglar. I could name all the names, Dennis Waitley and Brian Tracy and all these guys that had come out of the 70s, right? Jim Rohn, that's another one.
Right.
And so Successories has this platform and like, all right, they have this retail model, right? They're like, hey, you can franchise and be a retailer, sell all this stuff. So my wife and I, along with other partners, we bought a retail store and we owned a Successory store in Buffalo, New York for 5 years.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I'm learning new stuff.
I know, crazy, right? Yeah. And the reason I tell the story is because, I've been thinking, this stuff's been sort of germinating, for a long, long, long time for me. It was the days of, books on tape,
right.
And you'd buy the cassette program.
Right.
And, Anthony Robbins, he was called Anthony Robbins at the time. Now he's Tony Robbins, right? Anthony Robbins was this young guy, just like whippersnapper who was, unleashed the power within, right?
Right.
And that was consuming these things all the time was a big deal for me. Learning the process. And I went into sales and leadership roles, some small and some large organizations over time. And in early 2011, had an opportunity to spend a weekend in Chicago with this really interesting guy. My wife and I went to his weekend long seminar and we met an executive coach and I was like, oh, that's what I want to do when I grow.
Very cool.
And so I left sales and marketing, essentially call it quote unquote corporate America, and I stepped into the coaching arena. And when you do that, it's really interesting because you become the resource for others, helping them on their journey.
Right.
And so I really began swimming in these. Well, I went in deep in these waters, right? And it was around this time, a couple of years later, one of my mentors, Bruce Schneider, I write about him in the book. Bruce had built this really cool mental model for helping people to move successfully through their challenges and struggle on the golf course. And Bruce is an interesting guy, and he was a high-level amateur athlete, believe it or not, a softball player. He used to go to all these softball tournaments. Right. He found golf, right? And he got addicted to it. This is like in the mid 2000s, but he realized that there wasn't a really successful template for him to help him through the mental struggle of learning the game and playing at the high level that he wanted to play at. And so he found a coach, a PGA club pro in Chicago and a couple other people, and they built this model. So forth. And I started using some of these tools and so forth. And it was 2015 that I started getting the Mo Norman single plane swing stuff in my inbox.
FYI, guys, he is a single plane golfer. We wouldn't
100%.
We wouldn't have him if he wasn't.
I began the journey. Exactly.
100%.
Exactly. I was 2015. I'm like, man, first of all, I was really intrigued by Graves Golf Academy marketing model, because I was in the subject matter expert space also, right? Building my business. And so I thought, oh man, I would love to be a student. And I was also curious about what the things that I was using in my work, whether or not they were applicable in golf. And of course they were, right? In massive ways. And so, 2015, I showed up at Prairie Landing and met you and Todd on a beautiful summer weekend and started my journey.
Up in Chicago,
In Chicago, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. It's the names you bring up is funny because, first of all, Tony Robbins is a single plane golfer too, if you know that. But Tony Robbins contacted us years ago.
I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. And I haven't lately, but I'd send him two or three sets of clubs every year. He'd be updating his clubs all the time. And I'd send one to his house in California, one to his house in Cabo. And then a third one was going somewhere else.
But, the resort in Fiji, probably.
But I mean, it was like, he was like, I need them all my different places. So yeah, and we trade him out. And he was a big single plane golfer. But
he's 6'7".
Yeah, he's insanely tall.
Yeah.
But two things I remember. I mean, I've met Tony Robbins. In fact, we've done some work with Tony Robbins. But I remember going to one of Tony Robbins' first conferences. And he looked at everybody and he goes, I'm going to tell you something right now. Nothing here is unique to me. I've stolen everything I present. I just package it better. I'll never forget that. It's like
the case method. Yeah,
I just package it much better than everybody else.
Copy and steal everything.
100%. But also, Mo Norman. Mo loved Tony Robbins. And in fact, if you got in Mo's car, he always had self-help tapes. Like he had always cassettes. But he had cassette tape. He's playing. So when he'd drive, you know, he'd drive for hours. In fact, he lived 2 hours in the golf course because he just loved the drive. But he always listened to self-help tapes. He didn't listen to the radio. He didn't listen to anything else. And he would recite Tony Robbins. And he was addicted to Tony Robbins stuff. Because a lot of stuff that Mo would present or he talked during his demos and so on, he'd recite Tony Robbins. It was very obvious. But anyway.
Well, it's interesting you say that too, because I just did 9 hours of live with Tony Robbins.
Oh, really?
I just did it 3 days ago.
That's awesome.
And, you know, it's just so, like, first of all, you know, you can never go through this stuff enough.
Right.
Right. Was there stuff in there I'd heard before? Of course.
Of course.
Did it help me? Did it remind me? Yeah. Did it help me to reflect back to the things that are important for me? Absolutely. Yeah. And so, that's super cool.
And, you know, the beauty of what you do with us, though, is it's interesting because the demographic we deal with and with the majority of our demographic is guys that are fall in a couple of different categories. Number one, extremely frustrated with their game. So they've looked for single plane to help. That's number one. Okay. Yeah. So that's probably, that's probably a majority. I mean, I don't know a high percentage. I mean, it's a high percent. It's not like they're brand new to golf and they're just starting golf now. So we're not talking juniors and kids and, you know, and the majority are guys who are, okay, I'm either going to give the, you know, how many times have we heard, I'm going to give up the game or I'm doing single plane. This is my last result. I'm giving up the game. For a million times.
My last try.
This is my last try. That's number one. Or guy is number one.
Otherwise, I'm going to take up crocheting or something.
100%. And then you combine that with bodies that are, I'm not going to say falling apart, but they're not getting better. I'm saying almost breaking down. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
To a point, they're not getting younger. So they got the frustration. They got a body that's not completely working for them. Okay. And then obviously we got so many guys that just want it fast. So all of a sudden you get frustration, bodies that aren't working like they want, and then they want it faster than they're going to get it. And this is the mental game part. I mean, this is how do you help somebody saying, okay, you got to slow down. You know, you got to take this slow. It's not as frustrating. You're making this so much more difficult than it really is. Okay. Except that your body's not the greatest thing in the world right now. We can work around that. You know, that's mental game. I mean, let's just be honest. That's the mental game we deal with because, you know, it's interesting. The model that Todd and I presented, we've been presenting since natural golf days. I mean, since the late 90s. We've been doing it for almost 30 years now.
Yeah.
Okay. And it hasn't changed. It's the Mo Norman model. How we present it, how we teach it, how we preach it has changed dramatically because we realize it's getting, you know, between the ears with these guys and these gals. It's not so much of presenting a different model. It's how do we present so they can understand it easier, how they can get it easier. You know? And that's why we came to you. That's why we actually, you know, when you came to us and Paul met us through the school when he came up and, you know, he didn't come to us saying, I want to come to your school, my mental game coach. He came to the school and then, oh, by the way, I am, you know, I would like to help you in this arena. It was huge. And that's the fun part for me because even whether they come to a mental game school or the read your book, whatever, we're putting this into play in every school we go to. I mean, with everything we do,
right.
You know, it's always amazing. We've talked about this a million times. I can literally, as a guy's walking in the room for the first morning, I've never seen this guy from my life. I can tell you how receptive he's going to be in 2 minutes. To what we're presenting, and am I gonna have to break this guy down, or is what I'm talking about?
100%.
Am I gonna have to bust this guy down and really get into him and say, okay, you know, because you can just tell this attitude of, you know, is this gonna work for me or not? I mean, I don't even know how to explain it. Or that guy comes in there just so receptive to everything. I think that's probably what's a lot in this book, isn't it? I mean,
I'm thinking immediately. Yeah. There's a story in the book, and so the book basically is there's 36 stories. Okay. I call them reflections.
Right.
And they come from a lot of different areas. And some of them are first person. Mm-hmm. Others are just sort of like things I've seen out there, stories I tell about others that in some way, shape, or form help me think about some of the key tenets of great mental game, like awareness, presence, possibility thing.
Right.
Those are kind of the big buckets that I think of.
Right.
But like in one of the stories, I talk about the, you know, being at a 3-day in Orlando at Eagle Creek. And, you know, the very first morning, I sort of describe in the little reflection, I'm like, yeah, very first morning, Tim takes the group through, hey, we're going to start with the tiniest little movement we can here, right? We're not going out on the range hitting balls yet. We are going to start with the putter, right?
Yeah.
And, right, and you take him through this, and then everyone gets a chance to go out to the putting green. What do? Right. We're on the mirrors and the lines and so forth. And, you know, your instruction, it's unbelievably clear to this group. It's like, hey, we're just, because you take them through this idea of checkpoints. It's the first time they've heard this, right? And, you know, they all get up there. And I would say 80%, it's probably, it's probably a standard distribution, right? You know, so
it is.
You get you know, two or three who are absolutely perfect doing this exactly.
Right. You know. It's usually the ladies.
It's usually the women. They're listening. Right. Yeah. Us dudes, you know, we're like,
yeah, exactly.
What? No way. I'm doing it my way.
Exactly.
And I tell the story in the book about, you know, what I noticed is that, you know, within moments, these guys that are just frustrated because they're not making putts.
Right.
And the purpose is not to make putts. Right. The purpose is to understand this idea of checkpoints and make a movement with the putter.
Right.
And they're not there yet. They're not. So the article, the reflection is about expectations and the expectations we take into our game, even in the tiniest little moments. It's crazy.
My son and I were driving back yesterday. We went up to Tulsa for the day yesterday, and we're driving back, and he was a big baseball player, and now he's gotten into video games, and, you know, it's always athletic. You know what I'm saying? It's always, or it's always competition. And we were talking, and literally it rolled right into expectations, because, you know, I told him, I was talking to him about when I really loved him watching him on the mound, because to me, he was pitch by pitch by pitch. And he wasn't this, I've got to win. He was going to play into the moment.
You know what I'm saying?
Into the moment, which I felt like I could learn a lot from that. We talk about this, Paul and I talk about this all the time.
Yeah.
And I told him, he was talking about playing video games now, very competitive video games. And he was talking about how he went out and just got his behind kicked the other day. But he said, he walked in with no expectations. He literally walked in and said, I want to have some fun, just see what's going on.
Right.
And I said, and how much did you learn from that? And he's like, oh, it was amazing. He goes, it was just crazy how much I learned from that. I said, yeah. And we talked about that, because if he walked in with tons of expectations, I got to win this, and he went, loses his first two deals, he's upset, he's pissed. What does he want? You know what I'm saying? He walks away from this. And I literally brought up which you taught us, or what I've heard from you 1,000 times. It's like, you got to learn from the experience. And if you go in there, you know, I said, you know, Paul's old thing, got to leave expectations in the trunk. You know, when we, you know, how many times have we heard that from you? Just slam the trunk on your expectations when you get to the golf course.
100%.
100%. And that's massive. But for a second, and because I think a lot of our guys, they can't, because we bring up this in schools a lot, especially in the mental game schools, obviously, but they can't take that. They can't split this apart. When they say they leave the expectation in the trunk, they feel like they're not going to try their hardest. They feel like, you follow me here. It's like, it's like, okay, I'm giving up winning, or I'm giving up trying to win. I'm trying to give up trying to play good. And that's so not true. And explain that for a minute, because it's the first thing I hear. So when I say, they get upset with me, like, you can't do that. You know, I want to try hard. No, that's not what this is all about. You want to talk about that for a second?
Sure. Yeah. It's one of the most remarkable paradoxes in game, especially as it relates to the mental game. You know, we grow up and, you know, we learn in our culture is very much a win-loss culture,
right?
There's this profound duality in our language and in our culture. It's about winning and losing.
Right.
It's like, and we all know what winning and losing looks like, feels like, sounds like, right? Because we're experiencing it all the time. And the way we experience it and one of the reasons we experience it so much is because of our biology. What do I mean by that? Well, we walk around with this brain, and this brain is designed to do one thing, or above all else. It's designed to keep us alive. It's designed to help us survive.
Right.
And so it does that by recognizing threats. And so there's this sort of this software program running in our brain all day long.
Right.
And it's constantly trying to assess whether or not there's threats. And when there's a threat, it puts us into a completely different state, right? And like all of this stuff was great 50,000 years ago when we had to run from the saber-toothed tiger.
Right.
It's different today.
Right.
And the problem is this mechanism in our brain, typically it's referred to as the amygdala or the primitive brain. It can't tell the difference between a saber-toothed tiger and a slippery, you know, downhill 8-footer right. to right. win the right. match. It just can't distinguish between those. Right? Right. And so that's a problem. But no one ever teaches us this.
Right.
And we go through our entire lives and I meet, you know, 50, 60, 70-year-old people who have never even considered this. They're sitting going, oh, right. I never thought of that. Right. And so the reason why they struggle is because their primitive brain is influencing how they see reality. Right.
Okay.
And so when the thing that they really, 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 really want isn't happening or doesn't happen.
Right.
All they have is this reaction. It's this primitive reaction.
Right.
They don't have the capacity because they haven't really built the skill to bring context and perspective in the moment.
Right.
And so as much as anything, that's what I try and do in my work with the students who are on the single plane journey.
Right.
The reflections that are part of the most important game. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. There's a number of articles that are, you know, talk about what happens in the professional game, the game we see on TV every right. weekend, right? But most of the people that we interact with, especially in the Grayscale community, are playing a different game.
Oh, yeah.
It's not the same thing.
Right.
It really isn't.
Right.
And we can learn and we can be inspired and so forth. But I love the most important game, this book that I wrote, because it's for the common man. You know what I mean? It's
right.
like,
right.
it's well, for the everyday players.
It's for everybody. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, when I go out and practice in national and I'm listening to these guys play, the best players in the world, and I'm listening and talk to their mental game coach with her, they're saying the same thing. I mean, they are. It is. And they're dealing with the same thing. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, and some people have heard this or not, but they've heard the story, but, you know, they put heart rate monitors on professional golfers. They did this a few years back, and they did it was on the Korn Ferry Tour. And they put on the heart rate monitor on them. And they monitored the heart rate the entire round. And they expected when the guy got up over top of a tee ball, you know, with water on the right and water on the left, you know, and, you know, and it's the hard, one of the, you know, harder shots that an average golfer would see, that this heart rate go really high. And then, you know, that's what they expected to be the highest. And it wasn't. The heart rate got the highest went over those putts that they expected to make.
Sure.
So the 4, 5, 6, 7 footers. In fact, when they got over a driver, yeah. it was half of what it was over the long putt. They kind of freaked out the people that were registering this. And then they realized that the heart rate went up when the level of expectation went up. And so, you know, so no they're doubt. More nervous over the putts they were supposed to make. Hey, I got a 5-footer. I'm supposed yes. to be making this putt.
Yes.
I'm a professional. I'm supposed to be making yes. this. You know what I'm saying? Well, when you got guys, when our guys are out there and they're over those 5-footers, they're thinking the same thing. I mean, I'm supposed to be making these putts. You know yep. what I'm saying? And that's why when we do our short game schools, and I think the biggest reality checks I give guys are I send them over a 6-foot putt and go, guys, this is 50-50 on tour. This putt right here, and it freaks everybody out. They go,
right.
They look at me like, you got to be kidding me. I don't know. This is a 50-50 putt on tour. And they're like, and then first of all, they think I'm lying to them. It's like, yeah. they whack it. Like,
yeah,
I said, go look it up.
They're Googling that one right away.
100%. I said, and I'd always tell them, go look it up. I said, look yeah. them up. And it's funny because I give them that reality check. Like, guys, what you're watching on TV golf is such a lying to you. It's unbelievable. They're not going to watch you make show. They're not going to show you miss putt, miss putt, miss putt. But they're going to yeah. show you make a 440, 44. This guy makes another 54. This other guy makes. They show you these incredible shots. But yeah. if you follow one guy's yeah. round and just yeah. follow that one guy through the round, what would you see?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I love that you said that because what I've really gotten into ESPN feature group.
Right.
And there's, you know, three or,
yep.
you know, on the bigger tournaments, there might be two or three.
Yep.
I'm telling you what, right. do that. 100%. Because then you see.
Yeah.
What these guys are yeah. going through. You think these guys are making 41st every time?
They make one
no.
around. They're lucky to make 100%. One around. I mean, think about it. I saw the other day a guy made like a 30 or 40 footer, and they said the average guy makes 80 to 90 feet of putts around.
Yeah.
Around.
Yeah.
And so you think about that. He's making 4 or 5 footers. So you take 10 holes. That's 50 feet if that's 10 holes. So he's like, he's got 50 feet left the rest of the round.
I know.
So
it's like, yeah, that's good math.
No, it is. It yeah. really, but. So when I do the short games, because I give these guys reality checks, or I could throw them in a bunker and say the average golf pro is 40% up and down of a bunker. You know, like you watching TV and you think it's on 90%. That's not true. You know, so it's like real reality checks. So the the reason I bring that up is because people make so hard on themselves by expectations. You know, a good player would do this. A good player would do that. Whoa, 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 whoa. First of all, I don't think you have a reality check of what a good player would do. You follow what I'm saying here? Number two, because you know, that's by TV golf lying to you. Number two is, what's a good player? And are they there yet? You know, it's the old thing. I've seen guys get upset with themselves. And I don't know how many times I've heard good players saying, you've heard me say this, you don't have a right to get mad.
They haven't earned it.
Yeah. You've heard me say it in a million times.
Yeah, it's a great way to think about it. Yeah.
I mean, when you go pound balls for 8 hours a day for, you know, half your life and you get upset on something versus a guy's out there on a weekend golfer and he's throwing a club and getting upset with himself. And it's like, okay, if you earn that right to get upset with yourself, you
know.
So, but I mean, talk a little bit more about the book. I mean, a little bit more, but what guys will get out of the book.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, it's funny because I wrote every article, you know, but it's like, you know, sometimes you write this thing and you send it out into the ether and you don't revisit it for a long, long time.
100%.
You
know?
And look, if I'm, you know, we're all our worst critics, right? I would say, you know, a lot of these articles, if I had a chance to write them again, I'd write them differently. You know what I mean? Because, you know, today's the first day of me being my age, my level of maturity. You know what I mean? I wasn't the same person 5 years ago.
Probably the first day too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, but having said all that, I have to say, like, there's some great stuff in there, right? There's some great stories, you know, one of the stories I was thinking of last night as I came into Oklahoma City, it's a story about leaving here, one day, 3-4 years ago, maybe a little bit, and I encountered Marty, who was driving the rental car bus.
Right.
And the story is about Marty, you know, greets everybody. He's this super warm guy, you know, smiles, taking everyone's bags, doing all the things you should do. And it caught my eye a little bit, you know, and it was kind of what it was, one of those days where I had stayed at Rose Creek for as long as I possibly could. Right. So I'm like rushing. I'm like, I don't know. Right, I don't know if I'm going to make this thing, you know? So I'm amped up a little bit, but this guy, you know, his energy was just so good. And he just, you know, everybody getting on the bus, he just kind of made us feel good. Well, then he gets on the PA on the bus. He's like, all right, yeah, this is Marty. I'm your bus driver. I'm going to take you to the airport, you know, and it's going to be a 3-minute drive. And he goes, I'd like you to consider the following. And I'm going, oh man, what's this going to be? Right. You know, goes into this beautiful thing. He goes, I'd like you to consider that you're going to get on this airplane. And when the pilot is taking the plane down the runway, he's making tiny adjustments. And as the plane goes into the air, the airplane itself is making tiny adjustments. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you're up and you're soaring, you know, and he goes, consider that your life can be like that too. Like, you don't need to make the giant leap today. Just make a tiny adjustment, do one tiny little thing, and then do another, and then do another, and then, and just stack them, you know? And so it's, I wrote that article years ago, you know, I'm like, that is so inspiring. You know, we don't have to.
So when you leave here today, you're going to go get Marty and give him credit.
I'm looking for Marty. Yeah, for Marty? Seriously. I am looking for Marty. I looked for him last day. It wasn't Marty. Believe me. Marty is a gem. Right. You know, you don't find too many Martys, but, you know what I mean? So a lot of the things that are in the book are, reflections just because, you know, look, I swim in these waters. Mm-hmm. So my eyes are open looking for these things all the time. You know, I was talking to somebody recently and they have been going through some struggle and they've decided to make some changes in their life, you know? And when they were in struggle, they couldn't see past their hand, right, metaphorically speaking. And this person told me a story about, hey, I got to tell you this story. They called me and said, hey, you're not going to believe this. I was in this big city and I decided to help this person. In other words, get off of myself and serve another human being, right? And you wouldn't believe who I met. And this guy is incredible. And, you know, we had coffee and da, da, da. And so that all because they opened their eyes to possibility in a new way, you know, possibility for themselves, possibility for others. And the metaphor inside the game of golf, it's all there, right? It's all the same. It's all incredibly powerful.
It is. So. And it's the game of golf is so interesting because it's one of the very few sports that you play till as long as you want to play it. I mean, play it till you're under the, in the ground. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And it's all on your own. I mean, that's the beauty of it. I mean, it's a non-team game that's on your own. How hard do you want to practice it? It's amazing to me that it's the game and the core stays the same.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And you're out there trying to, as we get older, we're losing distance, we're losing speed, or that's a struggle for guys. I mean, we're trying to, how do we manage that? You know,
yes.
So you're not getting, you know, but we're mentally, I look at it as, you know, can we get, you know, everybody's looking, can we get mentally stronger? Is that going to help me with the game? You know, because obviously I'm not getting physically stronger. I'm going to help with the game. I think it's true because I always look at these young kids that go out there and I'm always thinking, okay, how do they get it? Because physically they're not any stronger or better 5 years or 10 years down the road. They're not.
Right.
But mentally they are, you know, that, and that's such a huge deal, especially those guys that got on the tour, you know, because you watch these guys, you know, when they could jump out on a tour and yes, they win when they're young, but they don't win consistently. Then all of a sudden you see these guys that go out there and they're winning or in the top 10 every week. And that's such a stronger mental game. You see that out there. And I mean, you know, we've talked about this many times.
No doubt.
You know, the guys that are always playing good, the guys are always, and it's between the years. There's no doubt about it. So and
it really is.
It's you know, how do they, because there's ebb and flows every week, you know, and how do you react to the negatives? How do you know how, and that's such a huge deal, isn't it?
Oh, it's huge. In fact, one of the stories that is in the book is, it's a reflection on sort of, well, it's kind of funny to say, but the young Jon Rahm,
right?
You know,
right?
Because Jon Rahm, he comes out in his very first year. I want to say it's 2017, and you know he's this young buck,
right.
And he just, I think he had, you know, 10 top tens.
Right,
I mean,
right.
he had an incredible year, right? So the in the story, the reflection is about early 2018 at. Actually, he's at the Farmers at Torrey Pines. And he is really in struggle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's Sortella or somebody on one of the mics is like, hey, from my perspective, Jon Rahm's biggest challenge in 2018 is going to be managing his expectations. 100%.
I remember this like it was yesterday.
Yeah, right? And boy, and interestingly enough, so that was January of 2018. He struggles the whole year.
Yep.
Right. 2019, he figures out.
Yep.
And this, I mean, here's a golfer who has done, he has matured so much.
Yeah.
You know, the slamming the clubs and, it just doesn't happen hardly any.
Nobody showed more, I don't know what, frustration on the golf course than Jon Rahm did. But then there's a big old boy out there just, and they're highlighting it. And all the commentators are talking about it.
Yeah.
They're waiting for him to blow up out there. They're waiting for that. And he did. And he's and literally, I mean, and he would just go crazy. And then, I mean, missing cuts because he couldn't get it back together. And they kept saying, this guy's got more, I remember that, more potential than all the other players put together.
Yeah.
And until he figures out the mental game or gets over the frustrations in this golf course, he ain't going to get it. I mean, I remember this again and again and again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to you know, sit down with him and just chat about that time in his life because. Yeah. You know, I talk about story quite a bit, you know, when I'm with clients, you know, because the stories that we hold on to and the ones we hold on really tightly to can really, you know, be a challenge for us and cause challenges for us, especially if we're stepping into a performance domain.
Right.
So again, you know, back to Rahm, he comes out and he has this incredible year. He's like, oh yeah, this is what professional golf is like.
Right.
Right. But that story, so that becomes his story for 2018. And the reason he was in struggle was because what he was experiencing, his reality, did not align with his story about what he should be experiencing.
100%.
And so once we figure that stuff out, I think it helps a lot.
Last thing in this, and then we'll wrap it up for today. But, you know, we're talking about playing the game of golf. So, you know, like you talk about John on the golf course, you know, guys get on the golf course and get frustrated, but I talk about this a lot, especially in our mental game schools, and I'm sure it's in this book, we talk about it in the book, but talk about how important it is to be in the right state of mind when you practice. Because, you know, a lot of our guys out here going, okay, well, you know, I play once a week or once a month. I'm lucky to get out there, you know, once a month, and, you know, but I try to practice as often as I can, you know, and this is a big thing that we talk about, especially, you know, in our mental game schools and so on, but it's so critical to be in that correct or right state of mind or when you're practicing, am I right? I mean,
it's huge.
And talk about that just for a little bit, because I don't think the average golfer understands this. I think, you know, a lot of people, we use practice as a relief. You know, they go out there and it's a stress relief. You know, like, I'm going to get to the golf course and get away from work. Or I'm going to get on the golf course and just get away from life for a while. You
right.
Now, I know I do. I mean, I do.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of competitive golfers that were competitive like me, you know, when you played through college or you played through, you know, semi-pro or pro or whatever you want to call it and played on the tour, and then they literally will put the clubs in the closet. It's like they're done. And people say, how do you not play anymore? They say, well, I can't play like I used to, so it's too frustrating for me. You know, I can't pull off those shots anymore, so I just don't do it anymore. And I use the game now as almost, as a stress relief. I mean, I go out there and say, okay, it's my time to get away, to spend a couple hours a day if I can, you know, at least every other day and get on the golf course. But a lot of that's when I practice too. But if you talk about a little bit, how important is it, or just a little bit about that, about being in the right state of mind when you practice? And about getting the most out of a practice, we talk about this a lot.
It's huge. God, and there's lots of ways to talk about this, but I think one of the biggest takeaways, I think, for and biggest insights for a lot of people who struggle inside of a practice environment is changing from being overly technical, which I get. Look, we're trying to hit a position. Trying to put our body in a certain way, right? But doing that versus gamifying practice, right? So there's a concept in high performance, and you can see this in whether it's military special forces or the NBA or PGA Tour or in name that everybody is inside of practice is focusing on high pressure, low stakes.
Right.
High pressure stakes. So can you put yourself in a high pressure situation where, you know, the metaphor is, can you get on the high wire? Can you get on the tightrope and walk the tightrope and know that if you fall, it's only a 2 foot fall.
Right.
So high pressure, low stakes. And so what does that look like for somebody practicing? Well, it's, you know, can I do 10 in a row from 3 feet?
Right.
You know, gamifying like that.
Right.
So that feeling the pressure, putting myself in that space, but the stakes are.
That's massive, because that's really interesting. The difference between becoming a high school player to a college player, college professional, is that the college players constantly look for those situations when they practice. And you see this. I mean, in fact, we bring those games up all the time, and there's 100 games learned in college that are gamifying, you know, and it's putting pressure on yourself to try to mimic what you're doing on the golf course. In those pressure situations, and you're right, low stake, and you're on the putting green by yourself, but it still means a lot. You know, it's still, you're trying to finish this, you're trying to get further than you ever have or whatever, you know, and whether it's through the full swing or whatever. But I think that it's also, you get back to the expectations on that. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, in that practice.
That's huge. And I would say there's one thing that I'll sort of put on the table that most people wouldn't consider as a mental game concept, but here's one inside of a practice. Because how many people do you know, I'm asking you, this is, you know, everybody does this in practice, hit, drag, right? Because you got a big pile of balls there, right? Here's a mental game. This is a mental game skill building inside of practice, right? See if you can do this. First of all, keep the basket over there.
Yeah, but this
not
is
dump, right. Not dumping the basket,
right.
Okay? And make a line, right? The basket is over there. You can hit the balls across on this side of the line, right? You can take one ball, right? And you're gonna you know, hit that ball with a purpose,
right?
It's got to have a purpose, right? And you're not hitting another ball until you walk all the way over there,
right?
And get one more ball, set it down, connect with your purpose, hit that shot. It's amazing how hard that is.
Oh, it is.
And then it's purely this. It's purely your mental game. It's purely your ego saying, "Oh, I gotta get this right."
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I think that's.
No, it is. It's, you know, and we talk a lot about practice A, practice B. You know, when you're working on positions or and so on, and then when you're working on focusing on, you know, being on the golf course and so on. But you know, it's. I think, you know, it's when you. People always ask us, you know, what's the difference between a really good player, average player, and a poor player? And we always say, you know, the good player, the great player knows how to practice. Or they I can say they mastered practice, but I guarantee you it's more about the mental game part of the practice than the practice itself. Because when I watch these best players in the world out there practicing, number one, I watch them hit a shot and they may hit a terrible shot and they watch it the entire way. They never turn their head. It's not like, I mean, you know how many times I've seen an average poor player, they hit a bad shot and they break another ball and the ball's in the air before the other one's even hit the ground. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, they're focusing on it, they're thinking about it. And then they're rehearsing a couple of shots in between, you know, trying to get the feel for what they really want to do. And they're getting back over the next shot. You know, it's like they're never rushed. You know what I'm saying? It's like they're out there for like a very specific purpose.
100%.
And then I watch the average support player out there. It's like it's a big rush session. It's like, how many balls can I pound in 10 minutes? You know, it's just like, you know, I got 200 balls here. I got to get through all these balls. You know, it's like, you know, it's interesting. It's such a different game when I see that out there.
That's so good. And I'll say one more thing about practice too, if I could, is that, you know, a lot of the folks in our community, they play a lot. Mm-hmm. And they might even say, oh, you know what? I play a lot.
Right, right.
You know, and they wonder why the scores aren't coming. You know, so they're not stepping into the practice domain.
Right.
Like they could, right? There's an article in The Most Important Game where I talk about that possibility lies on the other side of effort and how practice can be an incredibly important part of that.
Right.
But practice in a certain way. You know? And so, this concept of possibility thinking is incredibly profound as a mental game concept.
Right.
And it shows up, I think, in this practice discussion as well.
I love it.
Because possibility lies on the other side of effort.
Well, I love it. Well, obviously, I think everybody should get this. I mean, no doubt about it.
Well, I do too.
Yeah, of course.
Everybody.
Of course you do.
How many people on this planet?
Yeah.
We print 7 billion copies.
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah.
Has Amazon done that before?
Everybody should. Obviously, everybody in the Fast Forward training program is going to have it in hand, so they have no excuse there.
Yeah,
so,
they're excited about that.
Yeah,
talked to that group the other day.
They're really excited about it. The elite members are really excited about it. You'll be able to get through our website. We'll have access through this, and then get this thing and talk to Paul and actually come to the AI school, meet Paul, and come meet Paul in person. Yeah,
absolutely.
So yeah, our next podcast talk about the AI schools, but I'm really proud of this, Paul. I'm really proud of this for you, and this is really cool. So. You know, we can reference this all the time now, right?
Well, we certainly can. And for anybody that gets there's a really super nice forward in there by a guy named Graves.
Yeah, there you go.
So don't forget about that. So
yeah, then we can create more. We can have a version number two by more stories we create at the schools, right?
So, exactly.
Well, thanks for being with me this morning, Paul. We'll sign off now, and everybody, I'm going to tell everybody to get this book as soon as they can, and have a lot of fun with it.
Awesome. Thank you, Jim. Yep. Appreciate it.